This week, we passed the heartbreaking marker of 500,000 official deaths from COVID-19 here in the U.S. The entire entertainment industry was thrown into chaos, and every haunt had to adapt. And yet, there is good news on the horizon. By the end of March, Pfizer plans to ship more than 13 million vaccine doses per week to the United States. Moderna plans to deliver 100 million doses, and Johnson & Johnson expects to ship at least 20 million doses. This means that by the end of March, the United States is on track to receive 240 million doses. By mid-year, we should receive about 700 million doses, which is enough to vaccinate our entire population. This mid-year mark shows itself also in the reopening announcements from attractions across the U.S. For us haunters, that means hopes are high for this year's Halloween. Therefore, we here at the network will be spending the next few months on helping you plan for this season. But this week, where we stand at the intersection of both heartbreak and hope, let's spend some time reflecting. Our team produced the attraction industry's first virtual conference. Back then, we never could have imagined what awaited us. And yet, many of the insights we discovered then still hold true for our planning now. Today, I'm playing pieces of the keynote panel that started off that virtual conference. The keynote was called Flattening the Curve, Aftershocks for the Attractions Industry. From the Haunted Attraction Network, this is Philip. Join me in this trip into the past to reflect on planning our future for this season.
So first, the panelist I'd like to introduce is Amber Christopher. She is the Senior Vice President for Guest Experience at the Denver Zoo. Hey, Amber, thanks for joining us.
So I am with Denver Zoo. I've been there for about 15 years. We host about 2.2 million guests a year and are Colorado's biggest tourist attraction. The team that I lead includes all of our earned revenue efforts, facilities, maintenance, guest operations, and anything that you would see on a day-to-day visit to our campus.
That's amazing. Thank you again so much for joining us. Our next panelist is the director of entertainment productions at Zoo Tampa at Lowry Park, Alex Crow.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alex. I've been with Zoo Tampa only about 2 months right now, but my position there is to come in and help with all of the consumer events that we do there, such as our Creatures of the Night Halloween event, our Christmas in the Wild event, currently running as our Dinos Alive event was currently running. And it's my job to then craft those, find all the budgeting for it, then figure out the operations for it and how we're going to be successfully putting in front of guests. And in addition to that, it's my job to help curate and clean up our presentations for our educators that do our tram rides and our animal interactions within the park, and also our animal venture show in the park as well. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to ask you, you mentioned your history. In all transparency, I've known Alex for many years. And since you've only been with Zoo Tampa for a relatively short time, can you tell people a little bit about your previous employers?
Yeah.
That'll give them a better perspective on where your head's at.
I started way back in 2000 as a performer with the SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment Company. And I did that for about 6-7 years before I moved into their management side of things. And I took over their consumer events operations, working with Scott Swenson. So my job during that time frame, from about 2007 to 2016, was to do all the budgeting and operations of the events and be a bug in Scott's ear for the creative and what wouldn't work. And then after I did that at Busch Gardens Tampa till 2014 and at Busch Gardens Williamsburg from 2014 to 2016. And then I spent the last 3 years with Carnival Cruise Line, kind of changing industries, but the same kind of entertainment vibe, managing their guest entertainment program and enrichment, which is all the comedians and the variety acts you see performing on board and any of the lecturers and speaking series that we feature on board the Carnival ships. So it was my job to cast, manage, and basically polish anything that we saw on board the Carnival ships for the last 3 years, and now Zoo Tampa.
So basically, you've worked in every one of the hot spots that has been hit by COVID-19.
Yeah, very much. And because I deal with everything with humor, I like to say I got out of the cruise industry at the perfect time.
And now here you are in the zoo industry. So there you go. And our third panelist is somebody else who I've known for quite some time, Mr. Todd Hoglund, who is the Senior Director for Design and Development with Ripley Entertainment. Todd, tell us a little bit about what you do at Ripley's and of course, your illustrious career.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good morning, good afternoon to all of our participants. Yeah, at Ripley's Entertainment, I'm based here in Orlando in the headquarters and overseeing a team of designers that's doing small renovations to brand new attractions around our global attractions markets. We're looking at our Ripley's Believe It or Not, our aquariums, mirror mazes, haunted adventures, you name it, all of those various brands that fall under the Ripley's overarching brand. My background, over 30 years in the theme park and attractions business. Most recently, I was in Hong Kong for about 14 years, working at Ocean Park Hong Kong. I was the executive director for operations and entertainment. And I had the great fortune to work with a team to develop a massive Halloween event, one of the first ones in Asia that grew to one of the largest Halloween events in Asia, as well as a number of other seasonal events. So it's exciting to bring some of the operational experience that I have in theme parks to what I'm doing now at Ripley's and that Midway attraction and looking at the design side.
What have the large attractions been doing both internally and guest facing to keep moving forward during the most recent closures?
We're looking at our capital projects. What can we move forward with? We do have a team of designers that are working remotely at the moment, but putting forth projects that we think will help us as soon as we reopen so that we're better positioned to get back into the market and entertain those guests who are used to seeing the fun and crazy stuff that we do at Ripley's.
We are utilizing that time to rehearse and practice. We are working on our animal show there. So we use that time with no guests to really pull the animals out and the ambassadors out to focus on new behaviors and start utilizing that time with no guests to be able to put a product together for when they come back, they can be really impressed at all the homework the animals did. So we're trying to keep people engaged while we're not working via video and YouTube and social media. And then we're utilizing the other time just to prep ourselves.
Yeah. So all of those things that Alex and Todd have mentioned, and absolutely animals are taking our top priority here at Denver Zoo as well. So we mentioned the experiences with the animals during the day. So we have created something called Zoo to You that's done every day, really from an education angle, utilizing our education teams to help parents as they're working at home with their kiddos who are out of school. So what does that look like? We also recently had a baby rhino, who's the cutest thing ever if you haven't seen her yet. But we have a naming contest that we've put out there too, is really just trying to get the message out that, hey, we're still here. Animals are still here. We're taking care of, great care of them and moving forward. Lots of cost-cutting measures, obviously, that we've had to implement over the last week or so. We definitely were in the news a couple days ago for layoffs and furloughs and so forth that we had to implement as well, which is always tough to do for all of us. And then really now it's the focus moving forward of what it looks like to reopen and how do we envision the way that we do work, and can we take this opportunity to make some changes we've been talking about for a long time, but it was just too hard. And so really just how do we turn that visit on its head and really change things up?
I have two takeaways from that clip. First is that precisely as Todd predicted, most large parks spent their downtime finishing capital projects. Just look at Universal Beijing. However, that means for you that the competitive landscape has changed significantly. So as you're planning this season, take a moment to reassess what's changed in your local market. And the second takeaway ties directly into the first one. What can you do differently? It's a mistake to think things will be as they were when you reopen this season, but you can turn that into an advantage. To help you brainstorm some advantages, let's listen to this clip about audience engagement.
Has there been anything specific that has been done to maintain the brand and keep your guests engaged in your zoo or your attraction that has been ramped up? Because I know one of my clients is the Florida Aquarium here in Tampa, and I know that they are working diligently to continue to ramp up their social media presence and keep people engaged and to keep families educated and intrigued about their product during this downtime. Do any of you have any of those kinds of products and projects that are out there that people can know about so that they can go and check them out and continue to learn while we're all home sequestered?
Yeah, at zootampa.org, we put up a kids corner. So it's a section that's on the website that not only features content that Zoo Tampa ambassadors are creating, but it also is curated educational material. So it ties into what Amber was saying when they're ramping up education for their social media. It's a place for parents to go and grab coloring books and activities and see videos. And also, since we have dinos there currently, we actually have a video where we have one of our resident experts going through all the dinos.
We've broken it into two segments. We've got Ripley's Aquariums at Home and outside the auditoriums. So we've got our aquarium brand, which we're doing a number of social media interactions with, and everything from shark feedings. And we're going through a little more depth of what we do behind the scenes, to having some of our general managers do story time. Ripley's, obviously, we have a publishing arm, so we have our own books, and we're out there, and the GM will read a story online to some of the kids that are watching and keeping them engaged with our conservation and education message. The auditorium side, just the other day, we had a tour of our warehouse, which is here in Orlando, and huge response to that because it was a sneak peek into what the guests normally don't see. We typically wouldn't show that, but in this trying time, we felt that it was the right time to unveil a little bit of what happens in the backstage areas of our attractions and at our warehouse, and they could see some things that aren't on display, how we go about curating some of our exhibits, and how we're going to be looking at sharing them with the market when we reopen. Those are definitely areas in which we're focused in right now, keeping our market engaged, finding new ways to get them interested in what we're doing, and staying top of mind, because at some point we will be reopened, and hopefully those folks who are sitting at home right now, maybe a little cooped up, are able to connect a little bit closer with either the aquarium brand or our Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Our webpage also launched a couple days ago, and due to popular demand, Baby Rhino Cam 24/7, you can go in and check out what she's doing anytime. So we launched it last night, super popular, and she's pretty cute.
Looking back on all the ideas that were mentioned in that clip, we've seen someone try every single one of those ideas. So clearly the panelists were onto something even 11 months ago. But you still have about 6 months until the Halloween season really gets going. And that's plenty of time to implement something to keep your audience engaged and let them know that you're coming back. What assets can you utilize that others don't have access to? What can you do to excite your local community? Can you give your superfans some exclusive access to something? Now's the time to try anything that might engage your audience. Okay, our next clip is about understanding that we're entering a new normal.
I really think that when people come back, there's going to be a new normal for operations and guest interaction. And has there been any discussion or any plans, or what should we be discussing is probably the best question, about how to redefine what that guest experience is?
Yeah, I can start. So we're definitely anticipating that social distancing isn't going away anytime soon. Before we close, we were able to do about 3 days of time ticketing, which is unusual for us. It's just something we haven't typically done. And so we were able to test some things out. Our buildings have mostly been closed on site while we were, you know, nearing the end of when we went to a full closure, because people not wanting to be inside in spaces together. But definitely taking that social distancing lens to the experience and looking at time ticketing and limited attendance as we go into the year. And then does that mean some extended hours? We have our Lego. So we have a traveling exhibit starting in July. So does that mean we can go 8 to 8 and do extended hours and some of those things with those limited tickets? Adding hand washing stations, mobile ordering, just, you know, how do we limit the amount of lines and close contact spaces as much as we can for people when they come back to see us?
I'll jump in and give you a perspective from my previous life, currently at Ripley's, but working in Hong Kong for many years. The Asian markets are a bit more in tune with the epidemics or the pandemics, obviously with SARS and a few others going through those locations pretty rapidly, almost 20 years now. So they're very well prepared. And when I was at Ocean Park in Hong Kong, we had some very specific procedures and policies in place to both manage it as it was starting and then how to reopen. Obviously, you're looking at how your staffing are going to be situated. You're going to have a very visible presence in terms of cleaning, even when you reopen handrails and in terms of the janitorial or custodial side of the business. Capacity management, queue line management was going to be very important. And in a larger park where you're going to have large groups of people waiting in certain areas, you had to look at those things in everything from ventilation to the hand washing stations that Amber mentioned and the more common things. So it's training your staff to be cognizant of how that's going to be interpreted by the guests when they come back. They need to be empathized with the concerns that are going to be out there. Your guest services are going to be getting a lot of questions about how you handle those things. And it's best to have your team trained and prepared to answer those questions.
Basically, what Todd and Amber have said is the general rule of thumb is make sure that the cleanliness of the park and the maintaining that cleanliness of the park is forefront and people are seeing it. We actually hired more staff to come in and be more visible about cleaning. We also advertised it through our social media and letters to our memberships or our members. But yeah, moving forward, I think all of the interactions are going to have to keep this in mind to really encourage that we don't touch each other. We fist bump, we elbow bump. But like Amber said, the social distancing is not going to go away for quite some time. And it kind of reminds me of a funny meme I keep seeing around where everybody says, oh, now that COVID's here, we're supposed to wash our hands. What were you doing before?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's all of a sudden we're doing everything we were taught to do in kindergarten. Right.
11 months later, we know that the guest experience has entered a new normal. Disney announced just last week that guests should expect face masks through the end of 2021. Social distancing, time ticketing, avoiding large groups, ventilation, hand washing, and extra cleaning. Plan for these things now. Build them into your season plans. Yes, it means reassessing your throughput and budget, but it'll be worth it. You can always walk these changes back later. And our final clip deals with mitigating large crowds.
Have any of you had any plans to rethink the way guests gather to experience the actual attraction itself? With your baby rhino, for example, I'm sure that once you reopen, people are going to be crowded around that thing wanting to see it. So has there been any discussion or thoughts, or do you have any thoughts in regards to how do we reposition people for the big stuff that they're coming to see?
So yeah, it's a great point. We have a couple of large amphitheaters as well. And so how do we figure out how to cluster family groups and keep distance then for other folks? Certainly adding staffing in those areas to be able to assist with separation of people. The summer before had started creating some more intimate, if you will, animal experiences where we felt like our keeper teams could really share our conservation messages and some of the animal stories a little bit better in more frequent, smaller types of experiences. So we've been rolling those out for the last couple of years and have actually this summer are opening a new theater space, but it was intentionally designed with three or four smaller, more intimate components. The big shows, though, you're right, that host typically 500 or 600 people, we're going to have to figure out to like the Costco lines on the ground of how do you mark that 6 feet and make sure that people are being conscious of it. And that's, what's interesting is to go out in public now, whether you're in the parks or not, people are pretty conscious of trying to keep distance from others. And so I think if we add some staffing in some of those areas to assist with it, but I think for the most part, people are also trying to do it. I could see us also doing some more virtual stops, some more streaming online or through our app of some of those types of demonstrations that we do on a pretty regular basis.
We have a lot of high touch interactives that our guests are encouraged to go and touch and play with and explore. And just a couple of days ago, we were talking with our innovation team about what's the next generation of that? How do we evolve some of those? I think there's always going to be some of it, and obviously that on an operation side, that's going to have to be, you know, cleaned and hygienically maintained. But we're also looking at how can we have that engagement and that interactivity without the physical touching of a screen or a knob or something of that nature. I don't have an answer for it, but it's certainly something that's on our priority list to explore and determine what is that next step for us.
I think we're in a position now where there is no solid, clear answer. There is no magic bullet right now. But I think what's really important for panels like these is to let's start thinking about what the questions that we need to ask, because we can't find the answers unless we ask the right questions. And I think you're exactly right. If you've got either a large capacity theater or a high touch interactive experience, what you use the word evolution, Todd, which I think is really smart. What is the next evolution of that? And I think that's exactly what we should be asking and start to wrapping our brains around.
Do large crowds gather at your event? In 2020, we reported on 5 incidents which occurred within long lines, and we heard from many haunters on what they did to mitigate those lines. Can you eliminate your lines? Can you move those big moments that you have into smaller activations? What can you do to add some distance between your actors and your guests and between each guest? Can you move or repurpose high-touch areas? What Scott said is still true. There's no clear-cut answers, but you need to begin asking the right questions for this season. Next time, we'll explore the second half of this panel, which deals with predictions. We'll see what they got right, what they got wrong, and why any of it matters now. Thank you again to our panelists, Todd, Alex, and Amber, and our moderator, Scott Swenson. Thank you to Gantam Lighting and Controls for sponsoring not only this show, but the original Virtually Prepared Conference. Please share this episode with a fellow haunter and know that each time you share, you're supporting independent creators. This episode was sponsored in part by Gantam Lighting and Controls. I edited the episode with music from Chris Thomas and post-production assistance by David Swope. Subscribe so you can catch our shows every Tuesday and Thursday. And until next time, haunters, stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.